Hello and welcome to the Race Scene with Rob and Roller podcast. It is March, or excuse me, it's April 2nd. We're out of March. We're into April here. Holy cow, Rob, the year is
going by fast.
Over. But the good news is racing season is heating up still. We got a lot to talk about here. Rob's in Indianapolis, I'm in Charlotte. And I think we have a lot to talk about from Richmond. And it's not always a good thing to have a lot to talk about. But we do have a lot to talk about, and particularly that restart at the very end. Can't wait to talk about that. The stands in Richmond, oh boy. Why was that way? Long Beach has some news updates as well. Rob and I will once again talk more about that. That's going to be in the news segment, courtesy of Rob, and then also in our upshift downshift. And then we got something new we're going to do here today. We talked about the All-Star Race, the IndyCar All-Star Race. Well, for the first time in show history, we aren't doing a featured paint scheme. Rob, if you have it, cue the sad noise. I don't think we have sound
effects. Really do sound effects, I don't think. Masterful.
Imagine it in your head then, folks. But we're replacing it with Let's Make an IndyCar All-Star Race. So Rob and I are both going to give our takes on what we think an IndyCar All-Star Race should look like. Will it be that way? Probably not, because they don't ask us. Apparently we're too smart to give our thoughts. That's our going opinion, is that we're just too smart to work in the IndyCar front office.
Maybe we need to become part of a consulting group, and maybe then Mark Miles will listen to us.
I don't want to move to Boston.
I don't either.
All right, well, let's go ahead. Let's get into the show. Rob's got some... what you got here? About 10 news points you're going to talk about here today across 6 different segments of motorsports. And then we're going to get into the fun Let's Make an IndyCar All-Star Race. And then, of course, our main segment here, Upshift Downshift. Rob, take it away.
All right. We're going to go ahead and jump right into the news of the week. Talking first about Formula E. There's some cool stuff coming out of the Formula E. And I got to tell you, man, it is amazing to me to see the momentum Formula E has continuously built up in the last couple of years. But Lola, like we talked about last week, they announced that they're going to return to motorsport in Formula E. Well, they're going to do that by partnering with Yamaha. So it's going to be Lola Yamaha, but I believe still they're going to be a customer. You know, not necessarily, you know, they're going to have our trains by Yamaha. So that'll be kind of cool to definitely see Lola get back into the game. I'm excited to see that. Nissan has become the first manufacturer to commit to Formula E's Gen 4 regulations by signing an agreement to remain in the series until at least 2030, which sounds like it's a long way away, but in reality, it's only 6 years away, which is insane to think about. 2030 still feels like far off into the future, and it's only 6 years away.
2030 still feels 20 years away, and
yeah. What is happening? It's crazy. Time is wild. Anyway, let's move on into some Formula One news. Josh, I gotta ask you. I don't believe you have a name here, and I didn't check this. Do you know what name this is?
Oh, my bad. Whoops. Go ahead and skip to the next one. I'll tell you.
Okay, we'll put a pin in Formula One right now while Josh goes and looks that up for me, because he compiled a bit of list of news. I compiled my list of news, and I maybe didn't copy it as best as I should, Josh. I should have asked you, but it's okay. We'll talk about IndyCar, because we are going to talk about this later on here in the show. We talked about last week how NASCAR was, you know, apparently wanting to buy the 50% stake in the Long Beach Grand Prix that was held by Kevin Kalkhoven's estate. And apparently Gerald Forsyth, who, if you remember him, Forsyth Championship Racing, Paul Tracy, Greg Moore, you know, AJ Allmendinger went there for about half a year or so. You know, very, very involved in tramp car racing back in the day. He has purchased the remaining 50% of the Long Beach Grand Prix and has committed the event to being an IndyCar event. So, okay, that was kind of a lot of nothing, I guess, but I would still be interested to see what NASCAR is going to do down there, because now it's starting to seem more like they do are targeting something like Long Beach, but who knows what it would be. Yep. What you got, Josh?
I just sent it to you via text.
Ah, excellent. I appreciate you very much. Thank you.
We're video chatting on here, so you got to switch from the chat to the video, and I didn't want to make things overly complicated for you.
Gotcha. You are just fine. So, more on this. We'll also talk about this more on this later in the show here. Now that we have the driver's name, and I should have read this before, but I apologize to everybody. Sometimes I read news, and sometimes there's news that I miss. It is part of the game, and that's why Josh and I are both adding stuff to this thing as we go. But more on this later in the show. Mercedes has planned a 2-day test starting April 16th for its junior driver. Let me see here. Andrea Kimi Antonelli. He will take the wheel in Austria of the 2021 Mercedes W12. So again, we'll talk about that later on in the show. More on this also later in the show, talking about the two-wheeled world here in MotoGP. Liberty Media has reached an agreement to take over the commercial rights to the MotoGP series, adding it to its ownership, its racing portfolio of ownership, along with Formula One. So that's interesting. We'll talk about that later. But we'll talk about in NASCAR next. The March 30th ARCA West race that was scheduled for this weekend was postponed due to weather and will now be run as a doubleheader with Irwindale's second weekend over the July 4th weekend. Honestly, I kind of like that a little bit more. Just a tad bit. I think that's kind of cool. So anything at Irwindale is always gets the big old thumbs up from me. So especially at good old West races. I always used to love watching West races when they would be on Speed Channel back in the day. And I loved those. They would either be live or they'd be a rerun or something. And I used to always try and tune in for those because they were just cool. I just loved some of the short tracks that they ran out West. So some cool news, some really awesome news that I'm thrilled about. We talked about maybe a couple of weeks ago on the show about Cam Waters possibly doing some NASCAR this year. Well, he is indeed going to make his NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series debut this weekend at Martinsville with Thor Sport Racing is going to drive the number 66 truck. And I could not be more thrilled about this. I am absolutely thrilled. All in on this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I love to see all these Australian supercars drivers coming in and running some NASCAR while also still running in the championship down in Australia. I just think that's, I love that. I think that's awesome. Now, if only we could get Brody Kostecki in one or the other. I don't care what, just kind of bumming me out that he's just flat out not racing, even though he's the defending champion. So I wish he was at least in NASCAR or something. I don't know. I imagine maybe, you know what, what I was thinking about the other day was this could be a possibility, and it would not surprise me, is if he's not allowed to go to another team for another year under the terms of breaking his contract. That's my assumption, at least. Yeah, I have no...
Yeah. Well, they probably gave him permission last year to do the, oh yeah, go ahead, go do Indy, that's fine. And then now that he doesn't want to race with them, like, yeah, we're not letting you race anywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah,
that was my thought process.
You're probably,
I don't know
you're
if
probably
any of
right.
True. Exactly. Yeah, take it with a grain of salt still. But anyway. Interesting news here. NASCAR is apparently opening its first quote-unquote NASCAR Draft House restaurant soon at the St. Louis Airport per Sports Business Journal. Boy, maybe they could pour in a little bit more effort into some of their other properties. I mean, I don't understand, dude. NASCAR could be making so much more money if they rebranded or brought back the NASCAR Cafe or really put more money into
NASCAR
Speed
Cafe.
Park.
Did you ever go to a NASCAR Cafe, Rob?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I thought you did. I went to the one in I guess it's near Pigeon Forge in Sevierville.
Yeah.
Tennessee. That's the one I went to. I remember they had a Gordon car out front. 24 flame car out front. I remember getting my picture taken there. And I just remember also, I mean, it was a pretty cool place. Great NASCAR store, too, inside back in the day as well. Got an 81 Oreo Ritz car.
Ooh, there you go. Yeah. See, I ate at a couple of different NASCAR cafes. I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, I know I ate at one when I was in Tennessee. I just can't remember if it was the one you're talking about in Pigeon Forge or if it was the one that they used to have at NASCAR Speed Park, which is where we went because we went to Gatlinburg when I was 10.
They were right next to each other. They were right next to each other. Yeah.
So I know I went to one of those, but then the last time I was at one was when I was on a marching band trip to Universal Studios, and this was right before they closed the NASCAR cafe there. Yeah. And I remember I went there, and I bought a Casey Kane diecast there because obviously I have to, right?
Naturally.
But I went there, and the thing that was great about the time that I went there was I went during the Bud Shootout that year. So it was right before the Daytona 500. It was a week before the Daytona 500. So the Bud Shootout was going on, and it was Saturday night, and we were like exploring the park and everything, and all I wanted to do was hang out in the NASCAR cafe and watch the Bud Shootout. And I think my girlfriend at the time was like trying desperately to get me to not do that. And I was like, no, why don't you go hang out with your friends? I'm gonna chill here, eat some pizza, drink some soda, watch the race, and then I'll meet you guys wherever.
Yeah. I'm trying to collect. They made some diecasts. I guess one time they came, they opened one. I've got a NASCAR Cafe diecast in my office at work.
Oh, I do too. Because the one I have is a Pontiac Grand Prix, and it's called car number 4. It's just number 4. It says NASCAR Cafe. Is that similar to one?
I have one that's similar to that. I have the number 2.
But this one
is numbered 1998 because that's when it opened.
But Myrtle
Beach, 1998 Myrtle Beach NASCAR Cafe.
So. Oh my gosh!
Yes.
You know what? It's stuff like this that just makes me so glad we grew up during NASCAR's boom years.
I know.
Because we have all these great childhood memories because of it, right?
Exactly.
Like kids these days will never like kids these days, like Gen Xers will never understand this. And anyone younger than us will never understand this. Like, it's just truly a millennial thing of just experiencing NASCAR's boom period when you're a kid and being a NASCAR fan.
Yeah.
Like, only millennial NASCAR fans really know what that's like.
Well, we need millennials running it.
That's why we do. We really do. I mean, maybe Ben Kennedy will prove me wrong at some point. I don't know. You don't think so? You're shaking your head? No? If only, you know what, we should just, you and I should just go down to the courthouse, not to get married, but to change our name, to France, and try and sneak into the NASCAR boardroom.
Oh, boy.
And see if we can enact some changes that way.
Oh, boy.
We can pretend to be, distant cousins and relatives.
Rob is on medication, everybody. He's not thinking about committing fraud.
We're going to have our own thing. It'd probably be a lot easier to do it if we went to Penske and did that. He probably wouldn't notice.
Rob, hey, before we go, before you commit any more, what does Adam Stern have to say?
Adam Stern broke some interesting news Tuesday, saying that there's a rumor out there that Stuart Haas Racing could sell one or two of its charters in a downsizing effort. Stern also reports that Trackhouse, 2311 Legacy Motor Club, and Junior Motorsports could be potential bidders on any of those charters. Stuart Haas, however, has declined to comment on this.
I bet you they're at least going to sell one for sure.
Yeah,
because a 4-car team, they can basically get rid of, I hate to say it because it's the reality, but they can cut 40% of the workforce right there.
Yeah.
It
worked for Roush, man.
Well, eventually it worked for
eventually.
Roush.
It took them a long time, but eventually it worked.
I mean, there's a reason that Team Penske has stayed 3 and won't ever go to 4, and there's a reason that Hendrick Motorsports hasn't made a hasn't made a profit in over 10 years. They've got four. Yeah. They have three and have four charters. So
shoot, I forgot. I just realized I was a dumb. It was Penske had four cars in IndyCar, never in NASCAR. I just said a stupid thing because I wasn't thinking. Anyway, let's talk about sports car news. Porsche Motorsport North America has added another one-make championship to its portfolio with the Porsche Endurance Challenge North America. The four-event season will begin at Circuit of the Americas on May 26th before continuing at Road America on August 11th, then Sonoma on September 29th before concluding again at COTA on November 22nd. The first three races will be 60 minutes with the final round being a six-hour endurance race. So interesting little pieces of news there in the world of sports car racing. But more racing is always good. So Josh, why don't we go ahead and turn it over to the arguably what I would say outside of the upshift downshift is the main event of the show today.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, this is, we're not doing a feature paint scheme, folks. So if you came here for that, I'm sorry. It will probably be back next week. But we are there's no rules to this. This is just what we would do if we had full rein control. This would at least be what our foundation would look like. Rob's got his idea. I want to share mine.
What are we doing again, Josh? What are we doing again?
Let's make an IndyCar All-Star race.
I know that, but I'm just
yeah,
making
let's
sure.
Make an IndyCar, yeah, let's make an IndyCar All-Star race. And then we'll there's no rules. There's no rules to this. It's free open range. What would we do if we were in charge? We were told what to do. Of course, obviously, you know, there might be some things we miss. That in real life you would have to sneak some stuff in, which is fine. But this is the basis of what we've come up with. And Rob, why don't you go ahead and share yours first, and then I will share mine.
All right. So number one, this is existing in a world where Penske decides he wants to promote the series and actively invest into the series. So what he's decided to do is he has decided he wants to rent from NASCAR, much like he does with Iowa. He's going to rent Richmond Raceway and self-promote it, or at the very least gather some sort of corporate partner to do it for him. And it's going to be a $1 million winner-take-all 150-lap race at Richmond. This is what it's going to be. And this is how we're going to determine the field. So the top 15 in last year's IndyCar point standings, driver standings, are locked into the main event. So top 15. So this is to make sure that it's a true all-star race, right? You only take the top 15 because, we got 27, 28 cars. So you could take the top 15 and still have a pretty solid race with them. And then what we're going to do is those guys are going to be locked in. But anyone else, as long as you've attempted an IndyCar race, even if you failed to qualify for the Indy 500, even if you were an Indy 500 only one-off, even if it wasn't the Indy 500, even if you did a random race out, you know, let's say you just attempted the race at Toronto and that was it. You know, you're eligible, right? As long as you started a race within the previous season or up until the current season, kind of like similar to NASCAR, basically. You're eligible to run in this. What will happen then is we will have a last chance qualifier. And anybody who is outside that top 15 or entered in as that one-off or whatever, they must race in via the LCQ. The winner of the last chance qualifier plus the fan vote advance to the main event. So we'll have a fan vote and we'll have an LCQ. So you've got to win the LCQ and you've got to you got to win the fan vote. Those two things. And now the last chance qualifier is going to be a 75 lap sprint with one mandatory pit stop. Now the caveat to that one mandatory pit stop is much like we saw last year at St. Louis when we ran there. We ran an option tire on an oval. Well, we're going to do the same thing again. We're going to run an option tire for this all-star race on an oval. Now what's going to happen is in the LCQ, drivers must run both compounds at least once. Now with one mandatory pit stop, that means basically they have to choose whether or not they want to start on the alternate or on the primary tire and then choose what they want to do. So we get some differing strategy there at the very least, maybe some guys. And again, caution laps don't count. So, you know, if a caution comes out late in the LCQ with like maybe five to go, you could totally throw on a set of options and go out there and smoke the field, and it could make for some really exciting stuff, you know? But anyway, in the main event is going to be an 18 car. So 18 cars, top 15, plus LCQ winner, plus fan vote winner. So 18 cars, 150 lap main event. Like I said, $1 million winner take all. So the winner gets $1 million, right? No matter what. Like none of this, it's over $1 million purse and the winner only gets $500,000. No, winner gets the full million, right? There's no change, no stages. There's no halftime breaks, none of that. It's just 150 laps. If there's cautions, there's cautions, but they won't. Those caution laps won't count, right? Much like the LCQs, the alternate tire must be used. So the teams must run at least one stint on the alternate tire, but you must make a mandatory at least two pit stops during the 150 laps. Must make two pit stops, okay? Now, the only other couple of rules, like I said, this is the one interesting thing. In the event that the previous years, or depending on when this falls, let's say this happens in July or whatever, the reigning Indy 500 champion, let's say the reigning Indy 500 champion is a one-off, right? Like, kind of like Elio was in 2021, where he was running, you know, a partial schedule. Or Dan Weldon in 2011, you know, running just that one-off. Let's say that happens again. Well, they are automatically locked in to the main event, and there is no fan vote. So in that event, there's no need for a fan vote, because the reigning Indy 500 champion, by default, is considered an all-star, and therefore they should be in the all-star race. So you take out the fan vote to keep it at an easy 18, you know, 18 cars. So that kind of adds, you know, that kind of extra thing. You know, you win the Indy 500, let's say you're a one-off, you say, hey, we could take this car and go win $1 million if, you know, we're guaranteed a spot in this race. You can do it, you know? It's an option. That is kind of my idea. That is my version of an IndyCar All-Star race. Now, I chose Richmond just because I didn't want to do it on a road course, because I didn't feel like a road course would be exciting enough. And high-speed ovals, while exciting, I didn't really want to put that much. I felt like an event like that on a high-speed oval would still get pushback, especially given, you know, 2011, right? I felt like that would get a little bit more pushback. So I looked in the middle, and, you know, some people could say Iowa, sure, whatever, but let's face facts. Richmond is a better track, okay? Richmond is a better track for IndyCar. I'm just going to say it. I'm not ashamed of saying it. It is what I believe. And so I say in this scenario, like I said, Roger Penske pays NASCAR all this money and rents the track out in the middle of the summer, sometime at for a night race, and holds an all-star race there. That's my proposal. Josh, I am so curious. I am excited to hear what yours is now.
Okay. All right. Well, I like yours. That's great. So mine, I think you need to treat this all-star race like a prelude to the 500.
Okay.
Oval track. I thought of Richmond. And I know right now, if you were to do this next year, because I really don't know actually what next year's going to look like, but let's say it's the schedule for all intents and purposes is a carbon copy of this year with no changes, this is a complication. But I kind of like it at Nashville Super Speedway myself. I think it's a good go-between between a short oval, but it's not Texas. And I'm going to put it about two or three races into the season. Again, want it to be a prelude to the 500. So start at St. Petersburg and find another couple races to stick it before. You know, depending upon obviously where Long Beach falls, maybe put Barber before it. Maybe even put Texas before it too in like late March or whatever. Whatever it is, whatever the case may be. Two or three races before this race. Again, scheduled early mid-April. Guaranteed entries to the A main are past champions past Indy 500 winners and past Rookie of the Year winners. For reference, this year, that would have been Alex Palou, Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, and Will Power as top ones would be past champions. And then for 500 winners, Marcus Ericsson, Elio Castroneves, Takuma Sato, and Alexander Rossi. Past Rookie of the Year winners, Marcus Armstrong, Christian Lundgaard, Scott McLaughlin, Rins VK, Felix Rosenquist, and Marco Andretti. Obviously, those are just people who were declared to be racing at least one race this year. Ryan Hunter Ray is also on that list, you know, for again, just for reference, folks. Qualifying is a 5 laps with a required pit stop on lap 3. So you're going to go out, flying lap, hit, get the green flag, and then on your what would be your 3rd lap, you're pitting. This is a bringing the pit crew into it, all right? And you as a driver on pit road, can you get to your pit stall? Can you exit right? It's going to be minimal, but can you make it? Is you going to make a mistake? Or if you speed, you get a, you know, you get a, you get a deduction on your time. So I like putting that in. Guaranteed entries to the 500 or to the All-Star race are starting at the front. So that was 11 drivers I named off there, but there's going to be an invert. So the pole winner is the pole winner. Congratulations, you're the fastest. But there's an invert, guaranteed invert. Mm. You don't know what's going to be, and guess who gets to pick the invert? The pole sitter. Ooh. The pole sitter goes and draws it out. Boom. This is actually where you're going to start. Now, the rest of the qualifiers here, I should say that there's a minimum of 16 starters to this race, a minimum. Doesn't mean that it can be more than that, but it can't be less. So with this, you're going to have, I too have a fan vote deal, but you're going to, if there's 11 drivers guaranteed in, that means the top 4 are transferring over from the B main. Okay. And then you get the ice called it the People's Choice Award. They get transferred in. Now those guys are not all only going to start on an invert of their own, but the B main is going to be inverted as well to start. So if you're the fastest B main qualifier, you get inverted as well. So you could start first or you could start 13th. This makes for a little more exciting racing on that part, the way I see it. And then the People's Choice, by the way, before I get into race links, before they run the B main, they get pulled out. They go through all this so they don't have to fire up their engine and race. I just don't think that's fair. If you're the People's Choice, don't wreck your car and not be able to race. Pull them out. Make them happy. Interview them right there. How do you feel now? I have to race this thing. I feel happy. I'm glad I don't have to do this. All right.
Okay.
Now, B main is approximately, depending upon what track it would be at Nashville, I thought 50 laps. 50 laps with a mandatory pit stop. All right? You have to pit at least one time. You don't have, and there's no tire compound rule for the B main. You can run the same one the whole race, which everyone will be running the same tire, but, I mean, come on. You're either going to start on the red or the black, and you're going to get screwed on the other end, whatever. But then the main all-star race is 200 laps. There are no gimmicks. There are no stages. You just have to run it like a normal race, and you have to run 2 tire compounds. Simple as that. You want to do a 2-stop, 3-stop, whatever it is. 200 laps, take it or leave it. Now, let's get to the fun part here. If a full-time IndyCar driver wins the all-star race, right, so i.e. Will Power wins the all-star race and then goes on to win the 500, he earns a $250,000 bonus on top of the $1 million purse for winning the all-star race. Now, if a 500 only entry enters, i.e. Kyle Larson, Elio Castroneves, if they enter the all-star race and they go on and win it, they automatically get a $250,000 bonus, but they only get 125, and then they have to wait till the end of the season to collect the 125 to make sure they don't enter any. But they get a bonus as well. Now, if an all-star race only, excuse me here, I skipped over one. My bad. All right. Sorry about that, folks.
You're okay.
If the People's Choice wins, so the fan vote, if they win, They get the $1 million, and then a random fan in the stand walks home with $25,000 as well.
They get
so you're voting on who do you think can win out of all those guys who or gals who are in that pool. they get a they can earn $25,000 if that person wins as well. Right. And if there's an all-star only entry, so this person's not running the 500. Ryan Hunter Ray just wants to come out here and race. All right, he's got a car with a team that believes in him. He goes in, he's got a guaranteed entry. He's a past champion, he's a past 500 champion. He's automatically in. If he wins, he gets a $150,000 bonus on top of the million. So monetary incentives. Make him a little guy fight for it, folks. And again, I said the base winner purse is 1 million. I think Indy XT should be there for 2 nights. Right, 2 day. They get 2 races that weekend. Race them on the day before, and then race them before the actual All-Star race. Between maybe even between the B main and then the A main itself, depending upon time and how long the Indy NXT race would be. I think there should be an independent pit stop challenge as well. Why not do a bracket style? You screwed up in the actual pit stop for the in qualifying, but you get a chance to do it again. Have a big concert, and then to even make it more, this isn't really all-star race it built into it, but what they need to do is open up the garage area. There is a 3-hour window on this specific day. The garage is completely open to anybody. There are hauler tours, garage tours. You have a big OEM tent for Chevrolet, a big OEM tent for Honda, and you're just going around there, and you have different driver autograph sessions. Open it up to anybody. You don't need to even buy a pass. You don't even have to have a ticket to go there. Maybe you need to have a ticket. But if you have a ticket, you are guaranteed to be a part of this hauler pass or this garage pass. I think that would be super awesome. Now, I don't think... and then this, by the way, this is kind of a throughout-the-year kind of deal. Random fans at all IndyCar races. So beginning with the next race after the All-Star race, random 4-pack of All-Star tickets will be randomly picked from people who attended the race, scan their ticket to go in, will be given a 4-person ticket package to the next All-Star race the following year. So even you were at the previous race. Hey, we know it's next week, but you got 4 passes you can go to the All-Star race with, you know, that kind of deal. So just trying to make it a big deal, make it an all year round kind of deal. I think a prelude. This is possibly the first oval before the 500, right? Maybe it's the second one, depending upon how you schedule it. And if, you know, Texas is early enough, or Homestead, but I think it needs to be treated as a prelude. You need to have monetary incentives. Yes. Average Joe. Will Power can possibly just walk away with $1 million if he doesn't win the 500. But guess what? If he wins the All-Star race in the 500, he walks away with $1.25 million. That's amazing to me. Give these guys something to fight for. And I agree with you, at Road Course wouldn't be fight for this. I don't know. Rob, what do you think of mine? I thought yours was... I liked yours. I like the idea of Richmond. And I like the idea of no caution laps counting as well. Be critical of mine. What did you think?
No, I really didn't have any issues with yours. I mean, it was a different take, definitely. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, this is all in good fun. You know, it's not like, you know, we're not saying, you know, this is going to happen or this is what should happen or whatever. This is just what we think. This is what's fun. So I thought yours was actually really cool. And honestly, if either one of ours was used, I think that probably would have been that would be a hell of a lot better. Obviously, literally anything would be better than this whatever mess of an event this was.
Yes, 100%. I think either one you could plug in and make work. I like Richmond in the summer, and I like Nashville preluding it, or Texas preluding it, or Homestead even preluding it.
Yeah.
In March or April to the 500. So, I like it. I like them both a lot. Well, that was that, folks. Hopefully you enjoyed that. I know I had fun making it. I was scribbling. I scribbled out. We type on computers now, folks. But I was backspacing and trying to create new ones. And I know Rob, when I suggested it, was like, ooh, I love that idea.
I had ideas in my head already of what I wanted to do, and I was all ready for it.
And now I gave him a platform to express them. So you're welcome. All right, let's move on to the upshift downshift segment, the debate segment of our show, the part of the show where we talk about the topics of the week, of the races, the news portions. It could be also a hypothetical if we go down that route as well. So upshift, you agree, downshift, you disagree. We can throw it into neutral if we just can't find a way to go one way or the other, or if we upshift and downshift at the same time, technically that equals neutral. Like negative one plus one is zero. So simple math. You didn't think this was the math show, did you? But now you do. All right, question number one here. Do you upshift or downshift that MotoGP and Formula One should be contested on the same track on the same weekend? Rob?
Oh, downshift. That's too much. That wouldn't go... It wouldn't go well for either, because the problem is, I think, you have a very specific subset of motor racing fans that like four wheels and that like two wheels. And to my knowledge, there's very little overlap. Not saying there isn't overlap, but I've not really ever seen very many. You know, people who like MotoGP don't typically like F1. And people who like F1, they'll watch it, MotoGP, but it's not something that they're going to seek out, right? So I don't see that ending well at all. So that's, for me at least, a pretty easy downshift.
I ultimately downshift this for the same reasons you said, because I personally, I say anything with four wheels. Two-wheel racing just doesn't move the needle for me at all on anything, and I apologize.
I don't hate it.
Yeah, I don't hate it. It just doesn't move the needle for me. But I will say, I like the idea of if there's a track out there exists, and I saw when all this kind of started popping up late last week, a lot of people throwing out the Red Bull Ring. I like the idea of, like, maybe just doing it once. If you can find the right track.
Well, the Red Bull Ring wouldn't work, because you remember they had to alter the Red Bull Ring because they had that horrible accident in MotoGP.
Well, you can, but the track is still, but they have all the stuff, the chicanes built in. So all it is just, okay, F1 cars can't race there, and moving a couple signs for when the bikes go on the track. But I like the idea of them doing it just once. I would not want to see it every year or multiple times a year. I think that's too much, because I agree with what you say. You got the fan bases that just don't mix well. It is the Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean. They don't mix, folks, in case you didn't know that. You didn't know you were going to learn something other than racing today. They don't mix. I downshifted overall, but I upshift the idea of it happening maybe just once. All right, next one here. Williams team principal James Vowles has taken full responsibility for Williams not having a spare chassis. Do you upshift or downshift that the blame falls fully on him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty easy upshift again. I mean, this is another pretty easy decision. I mean, to not have a spare car and to be one of the people out there that are being like, F1 needs to be prestigious, and we need to have all of this, we need to be the top motor racing thing. And it's like, well, but the top echelon of motor racing would have a backup car. They would have a spare car. One would be available to them. If you're claiming that you're worth all this money and that you deserve all this money, it sure doesn't seem like you know how to reasonably use it, right? Because here you are at the back of the grid and you don't even have a spare chassis when you need one. So now you're, it doesn't matter if double points is maybe a far-fetched pipe dream. To still just not have one because you can't afford one is insane. The blame does fall solely on him at that point, because that's the team principal is the representative there. The team principal is the head of the organization, and if their failings, whatever the organization's failings, fall solely on the team principal. And so, yeah, absolutely, he is fully to blame.
Well, I'm going to downshift. And here's why. I know I'm not watching F1, but at all, really. But I love listening to James. And he's been very transparent. I love what he does with Williams' social media. I love listening to what he says on the in interviews, or just how open he is. He's very transparent. I think he, this is something that, I don't even remember the old team principal's name, there at Williams, that was there before James. But what James has pointed out is that Williams is far behind. And a lot of that is just because they didn't have the money to invest. And I think in this case, you can absolutely blame. He has blame in this. Don't get me wrong. There is blame in this. But I think he made a hard decision. And again, I'm basing this all off of what I've heard him talk about the last year, through his interviews and stuff, just talking about what Williams has and how what the capital they have and the struggle that they do have, despite there being a budget cap. They don't hit the budget cap number. You know, they don't spend all what they can. There's money left on the table for them to spend. I think they made the hard decision to make some investments elsewhere within the team and said, we're going to roll the dice and not have a spare chassis. That's an awfully hard decision to make. Again, it's all speculation. But I don't, there's blame. Again, there's blame on this. For that, with that was the decision that was made. He is a team principal. You got to be able to take that, and I think he's taking it in stride. He's admitted to it, but it's hard. You know what? Did we hear the saying? You can dress dog crap up in nice letterhead, but at the end of the day, it's still dog crap. Well, you can turn a team that looks like dog crap, but you can take it off the ground, but there's still dog crap left over. And I think that's a lot of what Williams is that. When they were bought out, when the Williams family was bought out, that team was dog crap.
It was.
They were behind the times. Their facilities are behind the times. So when you're trying to rebuild that and invest, and when there's certain numbers that Red Bull and Mercedes can outspend you on investment on infrastructure that go towards competition but aren't counted towards competition, then you're kind of in a hole. So I I 100% say there is blame on him, but I can't fully place it on him because it's been decisions that he is working with off the plate that he's having to make these hard decisions on. So I can't, listening to him, he's been giving me no reason. No one else in the sport has given me any reason to say that what he has said is false in the last year and a half. So therefore, I can't put 100% of the blame on him. On this situation, I still feel bad. It's a tough one. I wouldn't have had to make it myself. That's a tough position to be in as a team principal.
No doubt. That's everybody in the team. It's all, it falls on your shoulders, man. It's not something you want to have to deal with.
Yep. All right. Next one here. Eric Almirola should be given a playoff waiver if he wins an Xfinity Series race. Do you upshift or downshift?
What? Downshift. What? What? Why? Why? I don't, give me one reason why. He's not running full time. Like, he's not, the guy's not running full time. He's semi-retired. I mean, if he wanted to be eligible for the playoffs and make a playoff run, then he should have signed with Gibbs and said, I want to run full time. It didn't happen. Or he should have gone to a team where he could run full-time. He didn't want to run full-time. So why would he get a playoff waiver and then have to run 10 straight weeks? Or however many long it is. Isn't it like 8 races, excuse me? You know, like, why would... I don't get it. Why... I just don't get it. I downshift. I'm sorry. I apologize, Josh. I don't get it.
I ultimately probably downshift this as well. I think this is the one thing NASCAR at least has been consistent on when it comes to, or they've followed their own rules when it comes to waivers and playoff waivers for eligibility purposes. But I'm still of the opinion that you could miss 15 races due to injury, and i.e. win the championship like Kyle Busch did. So what's the difference between missing 10 to 13 races because you didn't want to run full time? And because you were injured. I don't know what the difference is, Rob. I don't know on the stat line.
The difference between injured and it's pretty, it's like you're injured, you can't race. If you're not running full time, it's not because you can't, it's because you aren't. You just aren't.
When has NASCAR ever denied a waiver, though, for anything that's been requested? Can you name one? You even get a waiver if you're suspended by NASCAR, which is bullcrap.
Yeah,
they automatically give it to you. I think at the end of the day, this is the one thing they have been consistent on. Like, yeah, you didn't run full time. Sorry. You did. Even if you ran 32 of the 33 races, you missed Daytona. My bad. Sorry. That sucks. But, you know, I would like to say the rule amended to say, okay, Eric, all right, you can get a waiver, but to be eligible to receive the waiver, you have to be top 20 in points. So you can miss as many races as you can, but you got to be top 20 in points and obviously run the full playoffs and the season finale, regular season finale. That's stupid and crazy. I get it. But at the same time, we give a waiver out for everything else in this sport. Oh. And you don't think Eric Almirola would be a deserving champion and a good custodian is the word I'm looking for. A good custodian of the championship. I don't know. Again, overall, I downshift this, but we give a waiver for every freaking else in this sport. And if you get suspended, you automatically get a waiver.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. All right. That was kind of a crazy one, though, because I acknowledge that. Do you upshift or downshift that NASCAR should penalize Joey Gase in some fashion for throwing his bumper at Dawson Cram during Saturday's Xfinity Series race after Cram dumped Gase? 100% dumped Gase. Do you upshift or downshift that NASCAR should penalize him?
Based on precedent, I think they have to give him some sort of, at the very least, monetary or points fine. But at the same, look, NASCAR has already been very like, hey, we don't want you walking onto the track to throw stuff like that. They've really tried to like downplay that kind of thing, especially since 2014, and as funny and as awesome and, you know, as interesting as the whole thing was, it's still a safety issue. You know, it's still a safety thing, and it should probably result in some kind of penalty. I don't care if you fine him $100 or $100,000. Like, I don't care. It should just be something. To at the very least send a message that says, hey, we don't want you to do this, but we're also going to use it as highlight on highlight reels. So,
all right. I was just going to kindly remind everyone that Austin Dillon was not given a penalty for throwing his helmet at Tyler Reddick last year at Pocono. We all remember that.
That's true.
Yep. I also think this, you know, I'm also a big believer in this. NASCAR, you can't penalize someone, then heavily promote it in use and post about it. I get it. Your competition department really doesn't communicate well with your social media department, clearly. But I don't think he deserves a penalty. I would say, if I was NASCAR, I would say, Joey, we know you know better. We know you're mad. Don't do it again. We can't have it happening again. Don't do it. Or if you're going to fine him, or if you're going to penalize him, I hate to say give him a points penalty, but give him a points penalty only, that doesn't hurt. That isn't going to hurt the bank right then. He's already admitted, like, hey, we only bring one car to Martinsville because this car's junked. So he's already $60,000 in the hole at least, maybe more. Why hurt him even further than that when he got just expressing frustration and was your most talked about thing on Saturday? Probably the weekend up until... We're going to talk about here in a second with Denny Hamlin in the final restart. It was your most talked about line item all weekend long was Joey Gase throwing his rear bumper cover at a competitor and nearly landing it on the front windshield of the car. I mean, that would have been great. I don't think he deserves a monetary penalty. So ultimately, I'm going to downshift this. Again, I know no one was hurt. It's easy to say that. I don't know. Again, I look back at the precedent to Austin Dillon. You didn't penalize the last one, but obviously you have penalized people for that before in the past, but you didn't do that time. I don't know. I don't like the idea of them penalizing Gase on this one. I just don't. I know the safety, you don't want people doing it. But don't kick a guy who's already clenching at his nuts on the ground wailing. Don't kick him again in the face. You know, that's what this is equivalent to. I don't like that idea. I hope NASCAR, if they do penalize him, they say, okay, look, you can, and this is what they always should do, I think, sometimes. Look, you can either take the monetary penalty and the points penalty, or you can sit out X amount of races based off what that fine is. Right? So you I think that's a good trade-off. All right, Joey, you can sit out these amount of races. What do you want to do? Now, in this situation, it might be beneficial because he may not be racing anyway. But still, at least it kind of sends a message where if it was a Denny Hamlin who did the same thing, they obviously have the money in the cars to be at the racetrack the next week, right? They're not going to be like, oh, crap, I don't have a car for Denny. But, like, look, this is what we're doing now. If this will probably be, if I had to guess, a $25,000 fine for being an Xfinity Series and probably a 25-point penalty as well, driver and car owner. So what's that equivalent to? One or two races sitting out, you know, for them? What do you want to do? Do you want to take the monetary fine right now and then go race and potentially tear up more stuff? Or, you know, again, give them an option. All right, we're going to this next one here. Do you upshift or downshift that the opportunity for NASCAR to race in Long Beach has closed?
I don't think so. I downshift that. I don't think it's entirely closed. I think anything's possible. I feel like if NASCAR really did want to go to Long Beach, I think they could make it happen in one way or another. I feel like it. I mean, I don't know. I feel like it could be done. I mean, they still have IMSA there, and IMSA's for all intents and purposes under the NASCAR banner. I mean, if you want to get technical about it, no, but yes, you know, it NASCAR has some kind of leverage there, and I would not be surprised if it was still potentially on the table. So to be honest with you, no, I downshift. I think the opportunity is still there.
I downshift as well. I don't think NASCAR would threaten to pull IMSA from there. I think that'd be
no. I wasn't saying that, serious. But I'm saying they use it more as, you know, they're already there. You know, that's their presence at Long Beach already. You know, they have some strings to pull if they really wanted to bring like Cup or Xfinity there.
Right. I think either way, you know, I can't see NASCAR, you know, if they would have bought it and had control, that they would have said, yeah, we're kicking IndyCar out. That would have been the biggest middle finger to North American Autosport. So anyone in IndyCar who was thinking that, you are absolutely insane.
Yeah, that was never going to happen. I don't know why people thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, but if NASCAR does come, it's going to be, hey, NASCAR is going to have to pay an inconvenience tax to the city of Long Beach because they're going to have to race either the week before or after IndyCar and IMSA are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's going to be an inconvenience tax for another week of barriers being up and whatnot. So I agree. I don't think the opportunity is closed. It's just closed for them to own it. And personally, if they can't work something out with the now fully Forsyth-owned event, if he's so blind that he can't, we can let you come in the week before or after. That's fine. No big deal. If he's so, I don't even know what the right word to use is here. Mm-hmm. Blind is probably the kindest word. Blind to not allow NASCAR to do that. I just don't think you're thinking straight on that one. I think
it's not like NASCAR would be the main event. Everybody knows what the main event is.
IndyCar will always be number one in Long Beach, but what it gives NASCAR is its spot in SoCal. That is semi-permanent. That's a very loose semi-permanent. But, yeah, I agree. I downshift. This opportunity has not closed. Everything's negotiable in life if you have enough money. And NASCAR is willing to, I'm sure, spend the money for the inconvenience tax for the city of Long Beach, and to, I'm sure, throw some dollars Forsyth's way as well. So, yeah, we're fine there. Do you upshift or downshift that Mercedes will sign a rookie driver to replace Lewis Hamilton in 2025?
No. Downshift. I think the most logical choice is out there for them right now, and it's not a driver in the F2 grid. Definitely not a driver in the F3 grid. Definitely not a driver on the F4 grid. I think it's a driver that's on the current F1 grid. Do I see signs going there? Maybe. But I'm not willing to say that yet. All I know is I really have a hard time believing that Mercedes will sign a driver fresh out of Formula 2 to replace Lewis Hamilton unless they are anywhere on the level of Lewis Hamilton. And right now, I just don't see anybody in Formula 2. Granted, I haven't watched as much as I used to, but nobody has really stuck out to me lately, kind of unlike the other previous, standouts, like when Lando Norris, when George Russell, when Oscar Piastri, when all of these guys were coming up, then it was like, okay, these guys are going to be an F1 at some point. But lately, I mean, there are some guys that I feel like could get an F1 seat, but at Mercedes, it feels like it would be a bit of a stretch. They could probably slot themselves into a Williams or a Sauber or an Alpine or something. But outside of that, it's like, do I see any of these going to a top team? Not right now, especially given the fact that Ferrari's juniors are just kind of meh. They're okay. They're not all that great, mainly because, Ferrari loves the Leclerc family, despite the fact that Arthur's not any good, and Charles is regressing way more than he's progressing, so. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really see it, honestly, but hey, anything can happen between now and then, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna echo everything you said. I downshift as well, and I'll just add, it's not Mercedes' MO to put a rookie driver in right away. I mean, look at Russell. He spent 2 or 3 years with Williams before he got the call to go drive for Mercedes. So it's not their MO. They're going to hire someone with experience that can get them 2-3 years before they bring in the next George Russell. Who that is, who knows? If it's Max Verstappen, it's someone who's going to be there for a long, long time. Potentially, long, long time being 6, 7, 8 years. If it's someone like Sainz, you're working probably more or less like you have been the rest of your career on borrowed time, where you are the second guy, you got to earn your take there. And even if you earn your take, so, they're going to hire someone who's got experience, definitely who's already, no rookie driver's going to drive for Mercedes anytime soon. Mm-mm. All right. The poor attendance at Richmond Raceway on Sunday night was primarily due to it being Easter Sunday. Do you have to downshift this, Rob?
I don't know if I'm going to go as far as to say that. I think, there's plenty of fans that come out on other holiday weekends, and a night race on a Sunday on a holiday weekend, I mean, I'm not going to blame that. What I'm more going to blame is probably the weather. The weather was, to my knowledge, throughout the day, just kind of raining. And there was not a lot of faith in how whether or not they were going to get it run. And thankfully, they were able to bring out the wet weather tires and get a couple of laps in and then get the track dry that way. And, they were good to go. So thankfully things worked out there, but I think a lot of people probably looked at the weather and was just like, I don't know that they're going to get it in, maybe I'll stay in, or maybe they just didn't want, I don't know if it was cold or whatever out there, I don't know actually what the weather was other than rainy, or I don't know what the temperature was. All I know is that it was raining. So I think in all honesty, the temperature probably would have had a lot more to do with that. I mean, if you would have had a beautiful day all day with you know, not a cloud in the sky, no showers, I think it would have probably been a lot better. But I just don't feel like that's accurate to say it's Easter because it's Easter. You know, like when Bristol Dirt was on Easter, I mean, that was not a great crowd, I guess, but it was basically the same as what we got this year, you know? So I don't really want to say that, oh, it's because it's being held on Easter. I think that it's just other factors. And the fact that Richmond has not exactly put on the best of races lately, I think that's another probable determining factor for why not many people showed up. But, you know, I mean, I didn't think the race was all that bad. I thought it was controversial, but in terms of it being bad, I didn't think so. I thought there was plenty of side-by-side racing, plenty of passing. I thought it was good. You know, but then again, you know, NASCAR fans are a fickle bunch and they're tough to please and they know what they want. And if they're not getting it, they're not going to waste their time and money. So I have a hard time upshifting. Yes. So I am going to downshift.
Well, I definitely think it played a factor, but I think you hit it on there. I downshift Easter. I don't understand why NASCAR is racing on Easter. I really don't. I don't think that meshes with this crowd. It's not a stick and ball sport racing or competing on Easter. It's racing. We just never have done it. I think the biggest thing is you hit on it. The product at Richmond has not been good for a few years, and the sad part is there's quote unquote easy ways to fix that. NASCAR is choosing not to, but the product. I mean, when I went there 2 years ago, the crowd was larger and it was small then. So they've kind of lost a grasp on the fans going to Richmond, and that's not a good thing. And that's a hard thing to get back. You got to have a race or two. You got to prove to people that it's worth going to this race. Or you have to have a similar track put on good racing, you know, beforehand. And you know, they always compare Richmond and Phoenix. Well, no one had many great things to say about Phoenix. Wasn't the worst Phoenix race we've had, but not, I mean, you had more people who should have been maybe looking at the bright side, looking at the bad side and talking bad. And you know, at least the viewership numbers were up on TV, but I mean, I don't know why they're doing it. It doesn't make sense to me. And, but I think overall the driving force was the product has not been good, which moves me to my next question. Richmond Raceway has only one date in 20. Do you upshift or downshift, Rob?
To say that Richmond will only have one date is probably too soon. Especially next year. I mean, it's not impossible. Obviously, with it being a NASCAR-owned track, they can do whatever they want with it. And if they decide to take that date and move it somewhere else, there's nothing stopping them from doing it. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say now because it's not. I've not heard any chatter about that. I've not heard any chatter about another racetrack finding its way onto the schedule. You know, right? Like, unless it's Long Beach, right? You know, I don't know. I think it's a little bit too early. But I did not think that this race was all that bad. I really didn't think it was all that bad.
It wasn't as bad, but it wasn't what Richmond should be. Let's put it like
no,
that.
No, but it was better than previous Richmond races, and I was okay with that. You know, I'm always when the product is better in at least visibly better, I'm okay with that. You know, and at least to me, visually speaking, it looked like the cars could pass. It looked like there was a lot of side by side racing. It looked like tire management meant something. You know, it looked like a good race. Maybe it didn't have as much action as it probably could have, but hey man, from my perspective, I didn't have a single issue with it. It got my stamp of approval. So I think the best thing for them to do is just make sure that Richmond races go back to being night races. Because I think the worst thing that they do is running these Richmond races during the day when they traditionally for 20 years were always run at night. And then suddenly they just decided, oh, we're gonna run them during the day now, you know. And I mean, come on, nobody wants to go to a Richmond race during the day. I don't. Like, literally, if you gave me tickets to a Richmond race and they told me you can go to a day race or a night race, I'm going to take the night race every single time. It's going to be better. I don't want to see a day race at Richmond. It's not interesting to me. I don't care. Now, a night race is automatically more interesting to me, regardless of the racing product. I don't know why. I don't know why. But it just is. So, even though, like I said, that's completely irrelevant to the topic, but I think NASCAR, if they decide to keep two dates for Richmond, need to be a night race. And if they do decide to ditch a second Richmond race, then it needs to be a night race. But as far as whether or not they do that, it's too soon to tell. I have to go into neutral ones, and I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to upshift this, and
that's fair.
I was going to upshift this before I saw the clip earlier, or I guess it was late yesterday. Jordan Bianchi on the Teardown was talking about that he's hearing chatter that Richmond will lose a date.
Oh, okay.
And I think it will. I think the two candidates to potentially take a Richmond date is Montreal and Long Beach. The August date that Richmond currently has is perfect for Montreal, perfect time slot. And when you look around this time frame of the year, this date is where it is currently, is a perfect spot in the area, general vicinity for Long Beach. Doesn't require a whole lot of moving around. Do I believe the first 10 race order of the season is perfect? No. It can be a little bit improved and better. But at the same time, again, Richmond is not putting on your best races. You aren't selling them out. Why am I going to two places where I can't sell out the tickets? And I feel bad for the crew there at Richmond. I don't know. Again, I don't know all what they're trying and what they're doing, what their obstacles are internally and externally, but they're just not selling tickets. They're not selling it out. And they have taken seats away several times, and they're still not able to fill it up. So, again, maybe it's time to go to one race there and try again somewhere else. I think a NASCAR race at Long Beach in Montreal would be very successful. That doesn't mean you can't have two races at Richmond again in the future. However, the way the NASCAR is going, there's going to be fewer and fewer tracks with multiple dates. I just don't. I personally, even as I'm watching the race on Sunday, I'm like, there's no way. 25. There's no way. Certainly no way in 26. I think if NASCAR is able to get a race at Montreal or Long Beach, Richmond is the place they take a date away from. It's not going to be Kansas. It's not going to be Darlington. It's obviously not going to be Talladega or Daytona. It's not going to be Martinsville at this time. It's going to be Richmond. Mm-hmm. So, and I feel bad. Again, I like Richmond. I love watching old Richmond. But they just got to find what makes that track good again, and there's ways to make it better. But they're just not unwilling to do those, make the changes. And here's what I was going to say. I didn't think the racing was great, but it wasn't horrible. It's better than the fast. The first 30 laps of that race is more entertaining. With the wet weather tires, they had more fall off. And I think the treads helped as well. I think we're seeing here that with that, whatever they did with that treading, they're able to duplicate that with treads on a slick, you know, obviously not as many treads. It's more of, I forget whatever the F1 they did with the F1 tires back in the day, but they're able to put a little bit of tread on there. I think you could have a bit good racing or improve racing in some areas that are struggling, because that is going to ultimately add horsepower, because you have the same amount of power but less traction, and you're going to require using more brake. Your tires out, put more heat in the tire, which is going to cause them to wear quicker and fall off and all this stuff. Again, we're going on a different spiral there. Okay. Thinking for what the question was, but again, I think Richmond, it was better, but it didn't equate to the fans. All right, last question here, and I think this is going to be a fun one to talk about as well, because I think NASCAR's backed himself in a little bit of a corner. Denny Hamlin jumped the final restart and should have received a penalty. Do you upshift or downshift, Rob?
The thing that's got me so kind of, I haven't said anything about this, but internally for the last couple of days, I've been really mad about this, because when I was watching the race, and granted, I understand, I'm also at work, I'm doing other things, but I have two eyes that work okay. Like, yeah, they might need glasses, but once they have glasses on, they work fine. It was pretty obvious to me that when it happened, I'm watching the replay, he jumped the start, and I could tell. I could very well tell. And my whole thing is, I really don't understand. NASCAR had the time. They had the time. They looked at the same replay that I looked at, probably had even more access to different angles and probably more data than I had to probably tell that Hamlin jumped the start. And what they should have done is black flagged his ass and sent him to the rear. I don't understand why they just let him celebrate and declared him the winner and didn't do anything. It was a blatant jump start. It was blatant. This whole idea of it, oh, it was being close. Oh, it's being close. It's like, no, it's not being close. As soon as we put in that restart zone, okay, we did that so that we could tell who, you know, when the start was jumped, right? So anytime you see this line, Hamlin can go anytime he's in this box. So as soon as he crosses that line, he can go. Fact of the matter is, he accelerates right as he gets to that line. It's a too close of a call. Truex is not accelerated. Nobody else is accelerated. Nobody else is expecting Hamlin to go. He went early. And if you're going to say, oh, well, you know, his front tires are touching it. Okay, well, don't you still have to be more or less have most of your car inside the box before you could go? You still do. You have to have at the very least half of your car in the box before you could go, I'm pretty sure, based on the rules.
All you have to do is cross. I think you have to be across the line. I think that is the rule. It could be wrong. I think we both could be right. We both could be wrong. One of us could be right. One of us could be wrong.
Rule has been pretty clear since it was invented and put in and installed that, hey, here's your box. Here's when you can go. And if you go any time before that, it's a penalty. So here's the box for when you can go. Don't accelerate before you get into this box. It's a cut and dry rule. And for NASCAR to sit here and then backtrack and go back and Elton Sawyer go on Sirius XM and be like, oh, well, yeah, it was a crunch time call that we made. And, you know, it could have gone either way because, if it happened earlier in the race, you would have been penalized. I'm like, what do you mean if it happened earlier in the race? It should, no matter when it happens, it should result in a penalty. If you're going to sit here now and say it's a penalty, I mean, you basically just allowed Hamlin to get away with cheating and give the middle finger to everybody else in the field. It's ridiculous that they are just doubling down on this. It's not like they could just take the win away. I mean, they should, and they probably can, but they're not going to. It should be a Truex victory. In all honesty, that race should have been won by Martin Truex Jr. It should have been, because he went when he was supposed to go, and Hamlin went early. That's the only reason why Hamlin got the jump on him, too. Think about it. If Hamlin goes in the box when he does, I don't think he wins that race by as much as he does. Okay? That's another thing to look into as well. Okay? You have the SMT data. You have all of this data in front of you. You can make this call in the moment. You have... it was an overtime start, so you had at least two laps plus the cooldown lap to tell him, hey, you jumped the start. I mean, yeah, you might say, that wasn't enough time. Okay, it wasn't a lot of time, but anybody with two eyes could see that he jumped that start, and y'all had plenty of time to make that call and not give him the checkered flag. Like, I don't know. I really don't know. And then the doubling down and then the going on Sirius XM and being like, you know, oh, it would have been a different call if it happened earlier in the race. It's like, that's BS. That is grade A bull. You know what there. It's a clown show. And Hamlin is soaking it in. He's making an April Fool's joke about it. He's just being classic Hamlin about it. And reality of it is just, never should have been in this way. It makes NASCAR look bad. It makes NASCAR look like a joke. And it's really annoying to me because they've been on such this positive upswing lately with not really doing that a lot. And now they're just basically coming out and telling all the fans, yeah, we kind of screwed up here, and we didn't fix it. We knew we screwed up, and we didn't fix it. So we're just going to live with this. It's like, based on this logic, you might as well just give Regan Smith the trophy for the 08 Talladega race at this point.
Well, they should.
I mean, they should have done that anyway, but at this point, I mean, what are we doing? I mean, this is ridiculous. I guess that doesn't make any sense now that I think about it, but if we're just altering races, I mean, I guess you should have just told Regan Smith, yeah, we probably would have given you the win there, but we didn't want to. We made a call in the moment, and we had to stick with it. It's like, that's basically the same thing. You know, Regan Smith was forced down below the yellow line. Denny Hamlin jumped the start. NASCAR knew that it was wrong, but they don't do anything about it. Time is a flat circle, Josh. Time is a flat circle.
I mean, I obviously upshift this too. It's clear. I think the rule is your nose has to cross the line. Well, his nose was not across the line when his car jumped. NASCAR had plenty of time to say, they could have even radioed Denny and said, "Hey, Denny, this restart is under review. This restart is under review." Now, okay, cross the line first. Shane Van Gisbergen crossed the line second at Circuit of the Americas in the Xfinity Series race.
Yeah.
Finished 27th. You know, he got the penalty for track limits. Same thing here. This is a version of track limits. You weren't across the line you needed to be to start the race. I mean, that's what Martin Truex had a lot to be mad about there. I think he took some anger out on Kyle Larson in this play. But he had every right to give, I think, Denny the bumper there. And I thought the same thing in the moment, like, he jumped that start. And the whole logic that you mentioned Nelson Sawyer saying, well, if it was earlier, what called, that's the same bullcrap I fight a referee with in basketball. Like, if it's a foul in the first quarter, it's a foul with 5 seconds to go in the game, and that team is down by two. It's a foul. It sucks. It's a foul. A foul is a foul. Police the race the same on lap one as you would on lap 400. It definitely is a black eye. It was an exciting way to end the race. They kind of maybe needed an exciting end, but with the whole Bubba just being in the wrong place with Larson having to check up, the crazy part about that, Larson lost two positions and then gained those two positions back on pit road.
Wild.
But just shows he's a wheel man and even spinning out. But yes, this is a 100% a black eye. Denny Hamlin won't admit it and shouldn't. He misjudged it. I mean, I can't see him doing it on purpose. He just misjudged where his car was. And that happens. But guess what? I misjudged my angle of defense on this offensive player and I fouled him. Sucks. Now they get two free throws and now we're down by four with 5 seconds to go. And for anyone who has never played basketball, trying to get 4 points in 5 seconds is a chore. Upshift this 100%. Denny Hamlin jumped it. No questions asked. Rob, take us to the weekend. Wrap up.
All right, we had a fun little weekend in the motorsports world. NASCAR was in Richmond in the Xfinity Series. Chandler Smith was the victor. That's the second dub of the year too for him. So that's, and he got it done at the same place where he won last year too. So
I think
Chandler Smith has figured out Richmond quite well.
It's his third career victory at Richmond because he won the truck series there too.
That's right, he did. I thought he did.
His first career win in trucks. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then, like we said, in Cup, Denny Hamlin's going to be on the official record books, but there should be an asterisk there. But hey, in Formula E, we had the Tokyo E-Prix, which was, again, quite fun. This racetrack, Josh, I don't know if you've seen it. Outside of Long Beach, I don't think I've ever seen a street circuit have as many elevation changes as this Tokyo track did. There were moments where it looked like those cars were just, like, they were going to fly down this ramp and then, like, they were going to come over the hill, catch some air, and then just fall. It was like, this is insane. And like the passes and the moves they were doing all while like they're going up and down these hills on a legitimate street course. I was like, man, this would be Josh, I this is probably a complete far-fetched pipe dream that will never happen, but it makes me think of what would happen if we ever had a street race in downtown San Francisco, where okay. you're just going up and down hills all over the place around this city, right? That's kind of what it made me think of, just how many bumps and hills this Tokyo track had in Formula E. It was great. But hey, Maximilian Gunter was the victor in Formula E, and that is great for him, because I remember watching him in Formula 2 all these years ago. He's always been an all right driver. You know, he's never really set the world on fire, but he's never really like been terrible either. You know, he's just been kind of average. So to see him go out there and get a win, prove himself to be a winner, and do it in quite honestly convincing fashion is pretty cool. So very happy for him. Yeah.
And isn't this like 5 or 6 different winners for the FE season here?
I think that what it sounds about right. Again, I mean, people could criticize Formula E all they want, and you know, but at the end of the day, the racing series has arguably some of the best racing in all of the world. Like, yeah. I mean, is it MX5 Cup worthy? Not always, but it can get there. You know, like Portland last year was like an MX5 Cup race. I mean, it can go either way sometimes, depending on how the track is. And the track at Tokyo was really, really well designed, good, cool looking track. If anybody gets a chance to go back and watch it, it was actually on live on CBS Sports Network. I know this because I was trying to find it on the Roku channel. And it wasn't there because for some, you know, for the last several races, Formula E's been on the Roku channel, and it wasn't there. And I'm like, oh, they're finally airing it on CBS Sports Network again. Great. Too bad the race is at 2:30 in the morning because they're in Japan.
Well, that's why it was live on CBS.
Exactly, right. Oh. So, but it was still a good race. Still enjoyed watching it.
You know, that's good. And guess what, Rob? You get to do it again this week with Formula One and being Formula in Japan as well.
Oh yeah, Formula One's in Japan, you're right.
Yeah.
See, and I like that because again, think about when I get home, Josh. On a weekend I get home at like between 11 and 12, right? Anytime between those times, depending on what time my shift gets off. So when a race starts at like 1 o'clock Eastern time, like that is chef's kiss perfect, because then I could just watch that before I go to bed. And I don't have to be working during it. I don't have to, you know, my complete attention can be used on this race. So I loved the Australian GP, you know, being able to watch that. And then now being able to watch the Japanese Grand Prix, watching the Tokyo E-Prix. Like, thank goodness, you know, I need more racing series to be far on the eastern part of the world more often.
All right, well, let me roll in here to Roller's featured driver. For this week, I turned the clock back to 1997 and the Indy 200 at the, rest in peace, Walt Disney World Speedway. Oh, my goodness, what a great track. It was race 3 of the 1997 IndyCar season, and I picked second place finisher Mike Groff. Now, when was the last time you heard that name? Yeah.
Oh, I think about him every day, Josh.
Yeah, is that so? If a girl asks you how often do you think about Mike Groff, like, every day,
every day.
I thought that was Greg Ray.
I think about Greg Ray, Buzz Calkins, Mike Groff, Davy Jones. All of these guys all the time. All IRL lifers from back in the day. I think about those guys. And Tice Carlson. I'll never forget. I got a picture with myself and Tice Carlson during practice for the 2012 Indy 500, and it's probably the coolest photo I ever have, and I love it. I do have a photo taken during the same day of me and Jason Leffler, which, you know, as you're aware, was like 1 year before he died. So that's also cool. But the photo of Tice Carlson is like, it's like, of all the people I got pictured with that day, it goes Tyce Carlson, Randy Bernard, and Jason Leffler, and I feel bad putting them in that order, but also I don't, because Tyce Carlson is awesome.
Well, speaking of one of the drivers Rob thinks about every day, I'm going to talk about Mike Groff just a bit. Is that okay, Rob?
I approve of this wholeheartedly.
All right. Well, oh, I forgot this note here. That day at Walt Disney World Speedway, he was driving the number 10 Bird Cunningham Nissan. So there you go. He started...
Infinity. It was an Infinity.
Infinity.
It was an Infinity-branded Nissan.
Infinity-branded Nissan. Thank you. Okay, thank you. There you go. He started 54 kart races between 1990 and 1996 and had a best finish of 6th at the then-great... It's still good. Okay. But I missed this version of Phoenix Raceway. Mm-hmm. He finished 6th that day, and that was in 1994. He also DNF'd about half those starts.
Sounds about right.
DNF'd about half of them. So, you know, rough 7 seasons there for him. But he did make 12 IRL starts, finishing 10 of them. Only finishing outside of the top 10 5 times. And he had 4 top 5s, where his best career finish was that 2nd place that day at Walt Disney World. Obviously his best career. And then between 1986 and 1989, he ran a total of 34 what is now the Indy Lights Series races. He scored 7 wins, 15 podiums, and he won the 1989 championship, and he won 4 times that year, Phoenix, Milwaukee, the Meadowlands, and then, again, another great track, Nazareth.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, Rob, so if you didn't think about Mike, it's actually, we're talking about recording, it's actually April 3rd, 12:07 a.m., so you have now officially thought of Mike Groff today. So
I have, happy. And I've also thought about Craig Ray and Buzz Calkins and Davy Jones and all those other guys.
Tyce, don't forget Tyce.
Oh, and of course Tyce. Well, Tyce, you know, him and I are friends on Facebook, so.
Really?
Yes.
Sweet.
We are actually friends on Facebook.
Well, there
because,
you go.
Because, fun fact, Tyce and my uncle, so it would have been my dad's sister's husband, right, went to North Central High School together.
Okay. The more you know, folks, the more you know. All right. Well, Rob, what's your final word of the week?
Simply put, my final word is NASCAR needs to get their act together and actually be... A firm series. I mean, there's no reason for us to have this much discourse over what should have been a cut and dry penalty. And you know, this is another problem where NASCAR creates controversy for itself when it doesn't need to. I mean, the ensuing controversy, had they penalized Hamlin, would have been far less than what it is now. The fact of the matter is they should have just penalized Denny in first place. But now they've made their bed and they have to lay in it. So, you know, the next time that this call comes up, it's going to be criticized again. And even though the rule is apparently cut and dry, apparently it's not. And that's a problem. So that's my final word of the day.
My final word is going to be about Richmond, about NASCAR. Less critical, but I just think it's something further to consider. You can declare a race wet weather tire to start. Don't mandate when you can take them off. I mean, I think that could have been really cool to see. Who's going to pit first for slicks, right? Who's going to pit first? And I know why they didn't. And that was because they didn't get the pit road dry in time before the start of the race. So they should have called an audible on everything and said, all right, guys, we're lining up the cars on the front stretch. Because we're going to dry pit row. We're going to make sure that's dry and ready to go before we drop the green flag. I know that throws a wrench into a lot of plans when it comes to dignitaries and VIPs. But guess what? At the end of the day, I think sometimes you got to put the competition above the dignitaries and folks. You know, also just be like, hey, this is why we're doing this. Use it as an educational moment. Spin it, baby. But because I think that would have been cool. Like, all right, guys, we're going to start on wet weather tires. It's up to you to decide when you go to slicks. I think that would have been really, really cool. I hope that is something that people are talking to NASCAR about, NASCAR made note about, and that they're like, all right, you know what? We know we can't do that again in the future. we will let the teams decide and the drivers decide when to pit for slicks. We aren't going to control it, because that's, at that point, why are you running the first 30 laps anyway? I mean, that's, I know why, but like, I don't get it. So something to consider, NASCAR. Don't know if you're listening. Probably not. You probably already tuned us out about 3 seasons ago, and that's okay. All right. Well, what's in the windshield here? We got Formula One begins their Asian turn this weekend. They're in Suzuka, and then in 2 weeks' time, the Chinese Grand Prix returns for the first time since 2019. It finally has not been canceled or just left off the calendar entirely. Mm. It finally looks like, unless there's an late April Fool's joke that is not a fool's joke, they will be racing in China in about 2.5 weeks. And then NASCAR brings the 3 national divisions to Martinsville with Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The trucks on Friday, Xfinity on Saturday, and the Cup on Sunday. So hopefully the weather cooperates. The weather's looking a little bit sketchy in that area once again. And hopefully that the tires aren't a problem and we're able to see some passing, and that, it's a good race. Good race for the Cup side.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for agreeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening. Let us know. Let us know what you think about all-star race ideas. What would you think? What would you like? That blend them together, get a high liked more than the other. Rob and I put a lot of thought into it, into our ideas, and obviously everyone's got their own independent idea as well. Let us know what you think about the upshift downshift as well. We had a lot of disagreement. I think it's one of the one times we've had some disagreements, and are that many disagreements in a while. So let us know those your thoughts on those points as well, and make sure you subscribe to whatever. And officially now, I was late, folks. You know me. I have an iPhone, but I'm still using Google because Apple sucks.
Yeah.
Did I say that out loud, Rob?
No, don't say that, because Apple Podcasts is actually a solid amount of our listener base. It's split between Spotify, Apple, and Google. So,
nice. I was gonna say, if you're Google now, if you're listening to this, you aren't listening to this on Google Podcasts. You're listening to this now on YouTube Music. So welcome to YouTube Music, everybody. I converted all my stuff now yesterday. When we started recording it, it would have been today. But welcome to the YouTube Music world. Google Podcast is officially... Rest in peace. Let's just leave it up there. It's
killed by Google.com, which is a real thing. You can look that up.
Yep, yep, yep. How many things have they killed us? We won't get into that. We need to end the show. So thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us on the good old X platform here. Rob is at rpeters33. That's RPEETERS33. I'm at roller_01. ROLLER_01. The show is exactly as it sounds and spelled out. ROBANDROLLER. Well, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Again, audience numbers, again, looking great this year. Continue to tell your friends, whatever you're doing, however you found it, make sure you point your racing friends in our direction as well. So for Rob Peters, I'm Josh Roller, and this has been the Racing with Rob and Roller podcast. Have a great Suzuka and Martinsville weekend, everybody.